Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 4.
We have our main character and this figure, Tai Bai Jingxing. They're heading to the Southern Heavenly Gate.
Mm-hmm.
And our guy, he's fast, like really fast, hops on his somersault cloud and just zooms off, leaves Tai Bai Jingxing totally in the dust.
Yeah, way behind. Quite an entrance, or tries to be.
But, the arrival, not quite the red carpet treatment he might have expected, hits a snag right at the gate.
He really does. And that's interesting straight away, isn't it? This obstacle. Heavenly King Zheng Zhang, her whole crew, Peng Lu Gubi, Dingxin Zhang Tao.
All these names.
Yeah, and loads of heavenly soldiers, you know, halberds, swords, the works, they just block his way.
So much for a smooth entry. You can see why he might think Tai Bai Jingxing pulled a fast one on him.
Oh, definitely. And he calls him out on it, doesn't he, when Tai Bai finally catches up.
Right. Did you trick me? But Tai Bai's explanation, it says a lot about how this heaven place works. Yeah.
Absolutely. It highlights the whole system. Tai Bai basically says, look, this is your first time here.
Uh-huh.
And crucially, you don't have any, like, official status. No title, no registration. The gatekeepers, they don't know you from Adam.
So it's like celestial bouncers checking the guest list. Protocol matters.
Big time. Even in heaven, it's all about order.
Tai Bai reassures him, though. Says, look, once you meet the heavenly lord, get registered. It'll all be fine.
Yeah, it'll get sorted. But you sense our guy isn't exactly thrilled about waiting around, maybe a bit impatient.
A hint of that, maybe, like, my power should be enough kind of vibe.
Could be. He probably expected his reputation or just his sheer ability to precede him. Tai Bai playing the guide here, the veteran showing the rookie the ropes.
So Tai Bai smooths it over, makes this formal announcement to the gatekeepers.
Right.
Says, this is an immortal from a lower realm summoned by imperial decree. That seems to do the trick.
That's the magic password. Imperial decree. Yeah. Suddenly the guards step back.
And our protagonist probably thinks, okay, finally, we're in.
For now, yeah. That official word carries weight. And what he sees next, well, it's something else entirely.
Oh, yeah. The description is just, wow. Stepping into heaven proper, golden light, red rainbows, this auspicious mist, purple clouds.
It's incredibly vivid. The South Heavenly Gate itself, dark blue tiles, bright jade, huge. And guarded by more powerful figures, right?
Yeah, with halberds and yaktails, gold-armored gods. It's impressive, but also kind of intimidating. Like, this place is seriously protected.
Definitely not just pretty. And inside, it gets even crazier.
It does. Pillars with golden dragons wrapped around them, bridges with colorful phoenixes. The whole place is just shimmering. Radiant light, misty air.
And the scale of it all. 33 heavenly palaces, 72 precious halls.
Kinyun Palace, Pisha Palace, Chawi Hall. So many names.
Each sounding incredibly grand. And these mythical creatures on the roofs, jade unicorns at the pillars. It reinforces that hierarchy, that order.
Everything seems significant, even the plants. Eternal flowers on this longevity star terrace, evergreen herbs near an elixir furnace.
It's a realm operating on a totally different level. Magic and permanence everywhere.
Then you get the scene near the Kiaxing Tower. Officials in fancy robes, crimson gauze, starlight crowns.
Jade hairpins, pearl shoes, the whole celestial court look. Presenting memorials, reports to the Jade Emperor. You hear bells, drums. This is formal. Very formal.
It is. A real contrast to our guy's style. And then the absolute center, the Lingxiao Precious Hall.
Even more opulent. Golden nailed jade doors, dancing phoenixes, winding corridors, layered roofs.
And this massive golden gourd on top. What's that about?
Good question. Maybe just pure celestial bling. But it all adds to the overwhelming majesty. It's meant to impress, maybe even overawe.
Makes sense. Inside, you've got the whole court scene. Mm. Celestial concubines, jade maidens, stern generals, dignified officials.
And these unique treasures scattered around. Tai pills, coral trees, and agate vases. Stuff you just wouldn't see anywhere else.
Emphasizing how different this world is.
Exactly. It's a different reality he's walked into.
Which brings us right to the audience with the Jade Emperor. And let's just say protocol goes out the window.
Completely. Tai Bai brings him in, and he just strolls into the Lingxiao Palace. No waiting, no summons. Just walks in, gives a sort of casual bow.
Isn't even fully prostrate, right? Just stands there listening while Tai Bai makes the report. What does that tell us? Ignorance or arrogance?
Maybe a bit of both. Or just a total disregard for their rules. Coming from his own background as a king, it sets a bad precedent immediately.
You bet. So when the Jade Emperor asks, which one is the demon immortal?
That, yeah.
Our guy just pipes up, bold as brass.
Mm-hmm.
I am he.
Oh, you can imagine the reaction. Shock, outrage. The officials are horrified. Total lack of etiquette.
Massive breach of decorum in this super formal setting.
Big time.
But the Jade Emperor, surprisingly, cuts him some slack. Says basically, okay, he's from down below, doesn't know our ways, we'll let it slide.
Which is quite forgiving, really. But does our guy appreciate it? His acknowledgement is just another casual nod, a tur.
Doesn't seem phased at all, does he? Like, he barely registered, he got a pass?
Nope. Maybe he thinks that's just how things are done. Or he genuinely doesn't care about their rules. Anyway, the Jade Emperor moves things along. Time to give him the job.
Right, gotta find him a post. And this is where it kind of goes sideways for him, though he doesn't realize it yet.
Not at all.
The military Star-Lord, Wukuo Shengjun, chimes in. Says there's an opening in the Imperial Horse Administration. Saddle.
Chief manager. Sounds okay on the surface.
Maybe. But the Jade Emperor just appoints him. Ooh-hoo. Bimouen. Stable master. And a low-ranking one at that.
Yeah, it feels dismissive. Almost like, let's stick him somewhere out of the way where he can't cause too much trouble.
Could be. The other officials all say their thanks. And our guy. Same casual acknowledgement.
Creatures of habit.
Then the Wood Virtue Star officer, Mu De Jingwan, is told to escort him to his new post. And, you know, initially, he seems genuinely pleased.
He does. The text says, Yi Juche, happy, joyful. He gets there, meets the deputy, checks the horse registers. He seems ready to get stuck in.
And these horses, wow. The light is incredible. Yeah. Dragon Steeds, Purple Swallows, Cloud Travelers, amazing names. Celestial Horses, clearly top tier.
So you'd think managing them would be kind of prestigious, right? Even if the title isn't amazing. You would think. And it shows the importance of the department, at least. These aren't nags. They're divine creatures. It's a real responsibility.
And he actually does a good job. Seriously diligent. Day and night. Checking on them. Feeding them.
Making sure they're thriving.
Yep.
And they do. The text says they got fatter and healthier under his care. So he's not incapable.
Not at all. He just needs the right motivation, maybe. Or the right kind of respect.
Seems like it. He puts the effort in when he feels like it. Or maybe before he understands the full picture.
So after maybe half a month, the other officials in the stables, they throw him a party. A welcoming banquet.
Seems friendly enough. Maybe they're impressed by his work ethic.
Could be. Everything's going fine. Been celebrating. And then he asks the killer question.
Yep. Right in the middle of it all. So, this Bimouen title, what's the actual rank?
Uh-oh. A penny drops.
Big time. He's finally asking about his place in the grand scheme of things.
And the answer is brutal. They tell him straight, Bimouen, it's Birol, not even in the official ranks.
Ouch.
Lowest of the low. No grade. Basically, you're the head groom, and if anything goes wrong with these priceless horses, it's your neck.
Imagine hearing that. He came expecting glory, recognition for his power.
And he gets stable duty, bottom rung. You can just picture the shock turning to rage.
Absolutely. He must feel totally tricked, mocked, remembering being a king back home.
King of Flower Fruit Mountain. Yeah, the contrast is massive. It's a huge blow to his pride. That clash between who he thinks he is and what this job says he is.
It's classic. And honestly, quite relatable. That feeling of being undervalued. We've all felt that. Maybe not quite on this scale.
True. And he doesn't just grumble. He explodes.
He really does. Knocks over the table, grabs his weapon, his, the staff.
The Rui Jingu Bang.
That's the one. And literally fights his way out. Past the officials, out of the stables, straight for the gate.
A very dramatic resignation.
Understatement. And interesting that the gate guards, the heavenly soldiers, they don't stop him this time. They know he's got that Bimouen registration, that sigil.
So they know he's supposed to be there, even if he's leaving under a cloud. But they also probably sense his power, right? Don't want to mess with him.
Probably wise. He's clearly furious and powerful.
So he storms back to Flower Fruit Mountain. And his monkeys, his lieutenants, the demon kings, they're overjoyed to see him.
Yeah, a hero's welcome. But there's that time difference thing again. They think he's been gone for ages, like over a decade.
Right. For him, it's been, what, 2 weeks? Maybe a bit more. Adds a layer of awkward comedy.
Definitely. And he's clearly embarrassed, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't want to tell them he's just cleaning stables.
Totally. When he finally spits it out, the Jade Emperor made me groom the horses. They're just as furious as he was.
How dare he disrespect our great king like that?
Their reaction totally validates his anger, gives him that backing.
Yeah, fuels his sense of being wronged. Mm-hmm. And right then, these two single-horned ghost kings turn up.
Bearing gifts, congratulations, and this really nice ochre-yellow robe.
He snaps it up, appoints one of them Vanguard General. He's back in king mode, big time. He is. Reasserting his authority immediately, accepting tribute, giving titles, rejecting Heaven's hierarchy.
But then comes the big idea. One of the Ghost Kings says, basically, look, with your power, why be a horsekeeper? You should call yourself Tasha.
Quishin Dasheng, great sage equal to Heaven.
Wow. That's audacious.
Incredibly audacious. It's a direct challenge, equal to Heaven. It perfectly plays to his ego, his resentment. Genius suggestion, really.
And he loves it instantly. Yes, perfect. Orders a banner made right away, tells everyone, call me Quishin Dasheng from now on.
Fully embracing it.
Uh-huh.
This is the turning point. Mm-hmm. He's not just complaining anymore. He's declaring war, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah.
Setting himself up in direct opposition.
And news travels fast in Heaven, apparently. Next day, reports fly in. Zong Tianxi, the guys from the stables, they tell the Jade Emperor, Sun Wukong.
Ah, finally his name.
Right. Sun Wukong left, angry about the job, and Heavenly King Zeng Zeng confirms, yeah, he stormed out the South Heavenly Gate.
The Emperor is not pleased. Predictable reaction. Send troops. Capture him.
And who steps up? Some big names. Li Tianwang, the pagoda bearer.
And his son, Nissa, the third Lotus Prince. They volunteer. These aren't minor players.
No kidding. The Emperor appoints Li Jing as Grand Marshal of Demon Subduing, Nissa as Great God of the Three Altars of the Sea. Sends them off immediately.
Things are escalating. Heaven's sending in the big guns now.
They get to Flowerfruit Mountain, set up camp, and send in Juling Shen, the giant spirit god, first, to issue a challenge.
Kind of a warm-up act, maybe?
Seems like it. Juling Shen stomps up to the Water Curtain Cave, all bluster. Tell that Bi Ma Wen to come out and surrender, still using the old title.
Still underestimating him? Big mistake.
The little monkeys run and tell their great sage, boss. Some heavenly generals outside demanding the Bi Ma Wen surrender.
Imagine Sun Wukong's reaction. Bi Ma Wen. Does he not know who I am now?
Exactly. He gets his gear on, purple gold crown, golden armor, cloud stepping shoes, grabs the Rui Jingu Bang, looking the part.
Making a statement. He emerges, looking every bit the powerful warrior king.
Juling Shen is actually taken aback for a second by the whole look. But then he's like, wait, aren't you the stable boy? Who do you think you are calling yourself equal to Heaven?
That condescending attitude again, focused on the past rank, not the present power.
Big mistake. They trade insults. Sun Wukong declares his new title, threatens to storm Heaven if they don't recognize it.
Juling Shen just laughs it off, calls him arrogant, and attacks with his axe.
And the fight is short. Sun Wukong is just too fast, too skilled, uses the staff.
Mm-hmm. Breaks Juling Shen's axe handle clean off. Defeats him easily.
Total domination. And he doesn't just let him run away, he taunts him. Go tell Li Tianwang, report back.
Rubbing it in, sending a clear message. I'm not the pushover you thought I was.
So Juling Shen crawls back, reports his defeat. Li Tianwang is furious, wants to execute him for failure.
Harsh, but Nezi steps in, says, hold on, Dad, let me go, I'll handle him.
So Li Tianwang agrees. Nezi goes out, looking pretty impressive himself, a much tougher opponent.
Oh yeah, Nezi's a serious deity. Powerful magic, lots of weapons.
The pre-fight trash talk happens again. Nez is arrogant. Sun Wukong's defiant about his title.
Standard procedure now, it seems.
Then Nez pulls out the big guns, transforms. Three heads, six arms.
Whoa, that's quite the look.
And he's got all sorts of magical gear. Demon-slaying sword, demon-chopping saber, binding lopes, pestles, embroidered balls, fire wheels. The works.
He's not messing around. This is serious divine power on display.
And the battle is intense. They go at it. Transformations, magic flying. Sounds epic. Sun Wukong is holding his own against this major deity.
Which really proves how powerful Sun Wukong actually is. It's not just talk.
But Wukong's smart, too. Not just strong. He uses a trick. Plucks out a hair, turns it into a clone of himself.
Sneaks up behind Nezi while they're fighting.
And whacks him on the arm. Injures him enough that Nezi has to retreat outsmarted.
Classic Wukong. Brains and brawn. That cunning is just as dangerous as his staff.
So Nezi limps back. Li Tianwang is stunned. You lost too.
Yeah, big shock. Nezi reports, he's really strong, Dad. And he's got this banner, great sage equal to Heaven. Demands you recognize it or he'll attack the Lingxiao Palace.
The threat is real now. They've sent two major fighters, both beaten. Li Tianwang decides, okay, this isn't working. Time to go back and report to the Jade Emperor. Can't keep fighting a losing battle.
Smart move. Regroup. Reassess. This monkey is more than they bargained for.
Meanwhile, back at the cave, Sun Wukong is celebrating. victorious again. All the Demon Kings, his six Swarm Brothers are there, cheering him on.
Riding high and feeling generous, apparently. Or maybe just wanting to build his own court.
Yeah, he suggests, hey, brothers, you should all be great sages, too.
Spreading the love. Or the rebellion.
They're all for it. So they come up with their own titles. Bull Demon King is
Fing Tian Da Sheng, great sage who pacifies heaven.
Jade Demon King is Sianor Fu Hai Da Sheng, great sage who overturns the seas.
Ping Demon King, Shan Sa Jian, Hunting Na Cha Sheng confuses the heavens. Lion Camel King, Sun Xian, Yi Shan Da Sheng moves mountains.
Macaca King, Serger, Tong Feng Da Sheng knows the winds. And the Yurong King, Quishan Da Sheng drives spirits.
Quite the lineup. Seven great sages, a powerful alliance forming right under heaven's nose.
They have a quick party, then scatter. But the news reaches the Jade Emperor. Li Dianwang and Neza give their report. Wukong's incredibly strong, defeated them both, insists on the title.
And threatens to attack the capital. The emperor's first reaction, disbelief, then fury. Execute him, now.
Things look bad again. Execution order issued. But wait, who steps in?
Our old friend, Tai Bai Jingxing, the diplomat. Again.
He's got another idea. Says basically, Your Majesty, fighting isn't working. Why not? Just give him the title.
Call him Qishan Da Sheng. It's an empty title anyway. No power, no salary, just the name.
It'll stroke his ego, maybe calm him down, keep the peace. Is it appeasement or smart politics?
Probably a bit of both. Tai Bai's a pragmatist. He sees this avoids more fighting, more embarrassment for heaven. It's a way to manage the problem without losing face entirely or actual power.
The Jade Emperor thinks about it and agrees. Okay, let's try it. Second imperial decree is issued. Tai Bai heads back down.
To Flower Fruit Mountain again? And this time, the place is buzzing. Even more guards, more banners, more noise. They're feeling confident down there.
Oh, yeah. The demons are initially hostile when they see Tai Bai coming back. What do you want again?
Understandable reaction. But Tai Bai says, easy now. I have an imperial decree for your great sage.
That gets their attention. They run to tell Wukong. And Wukong hears Tai Bai's back. He actually thinks it's good news. Like, aha. They're coming back with a better offer.
Bit optimistic, maybe, or just really wanting that recognition. He seems ready to believe the best.
He puts on a whole show to welcome Tai Bai. Full military honors, flags, drums, his monkey army in armor. He's wearing that ochre robe.
Playing the role of the respected ruler receiving an envoy. He greets Tai Bai politely, apologizes for the previous fuss.
Showing he can play the game when he wants to, Tai Bai then explains everything. Carefully.
Very carefully. Look, they reported you left. Emperor was mad, sent troops, they lost, reported your banner. I argued for you, said, just give him the title, avoid war.
Painting himself as Wukong's champion in court.
Yeah, yeah.
Making it sound like Wukong forced heaven's hand.
Skillful diplomacy. Or manipulation.
Wukong laps it up. He's pleased.
Yes.
So is this title, like, a real thing in heaven?
Tai Bai assures him, absolutely, Emperor approved it himself. If it's not good enough, blame me. That seems to clinch it.
The personal guarantee. Wukong's overjoyed. Okay, let's go. Back to heaven they go.
Third time's the charm.
Maybe. This time, the reception at the Southern Heavenly Gate is respectful. No roadblocks. They go straight to the Lingxiao Palace.
Tai Bai reports, brought Sun Wukong as ordered.
And the Jade Emperor makes it official. Decrees. Sun Wukong is hereby appointed Qishan Da Sheng, great sage, equal to heaven. High rank, but...
Don't cause any more trouble. A warning attached. A velvet glove over an iron fist, maybe?
Could be. Wukong just gives his usual simple thanks. Doesn't seem to read too much into the warning.
Just happy with the title.
And then they build him a mansion. The Yune Mansion of the Great Sage Equal to Heaven. Right next to the peach garden, interestingly.
Mm. Prime real estate. It even comes with staff.
Yeah.
Two whole departments. The Tranquility Office and the Spirit Pacification Office. Sounds important.
Gives it the appearance of substance, doesn't it? And they send the Five Dipper Star Lord to escort him there with gifts, imperial wine, golden flowers.
The Celestial Welcome Package, part two, to keep him sweet.
Seems to work. Wukong accepts, cracks open the wine with his new subordinates immediately. Seems perfectly happy.
The Star Lord reports back, mission accomplished. He's content. And for now, Wukong is. He's got the title, the mansion, the apparent respect. No worries.
And that final line, his name is now on the immortal register. He's escaped reincarnation. That's huge, right?
It is. That's a major goal achieved. Immortality secured. But it also ties him more firmly to heaven, in a way.
So let's wrap this part up. We saw the grand arrival, The quick letdown with the stable job, the defiant return, the self-proclaimed title, the failed suppression attempts, and finally, this compromise. A grand title, a mansion. But is it real power?
That's the big question for you listeners, isn't it? How does Sun Wukong really feel deep down? Is this a win? Or just a fancy cage? What's a great sage equal to heaven do if he has no actual job?
Right. It really digs into ambition, pride, navigating these power structures, even in a mythical heaven. Makes you think, how does this stuff play out in our world? Is the title always the same as the influence?
Definitely food for thought. And it leaves us hanging, doesn't it?
Right.
Will he stay content playing the sage in his fancy mansion, or is this just setting the stage for the next round of trouble?
Feels like there's definitely more to this story.